The Financial Sense Midweek Edition with Jim Poplava. Delving in-depth with authors and experts into the key economic issues. Today's host is the Senior Editor for Financial Sense, Chris Sheridan.
Joining us on the show today is Eric Haddock. He is the editor and publisher of Inside Track and Weekly Relay. So we had you on in 2006, and you had said that you were looking at a top process in the market. Certainly we saw that in 2007, and the last time we had you on was in October of 2014, so exactly a year ago from today. And just like you said in 2006, last year you said that you saw a massive convergence of cycles taking place, and you gave a number of very prescient forecasts of what you were expecting to see, one of which was the market topping out late 2014 with the major indices, the Dow, Russell, NASDAQ, probably seeing major peaks in a 3 to 6 month time frame. We ended up seeing most of the major indices peak out around that time frame. I believe it was in May of 2015. And then you also expected to see a multi-year bottom in gold and silver around mid-2015. We certainly did see a major low in July and going into August, and both gold and silver have headed up fairly strongly. We've seen a pretty good rally in those metals since then. And you also said that you expected to see a strong dollar rally into 2015 and then a subsequent reversal. So those were some of the forecasts that you gave there. A number of those have played out to a T. So with that said, would you mind just giving us an update of where you think things stand currently?
Well, from a very broad stroke perspective, really the main focus when we were talking a year ago was that I contended that a 40-year cycle of inflationary stock market move, stockflation as I was calling it, was culminating in late 2014, exactly 40 years from the beginning of that move in December 1974, and that a new paradigm was going to begin to take over the market and begin to pressure them. The really intriguing thing to me was that in 2015, there was going to be this convergence of all these different cycles that I watch, as well as many technical indicators that were already beginning to show signs of a top, and even some fundamental factors that I don't think most people are paying much attention to, but which were starting to gain some momentum and nearing that tipping point. All of this was coming together in late 2014, and I thought would continue to play out into early 2015, and that the first phase of a bear market would be something that took place in the middle half of the year, from late April to late September, and even with the most bearish move from May to August, and that we would see at least a 20% drop in the majority of indices, both domestic and global, and that that would usher in an even bigger bear market that I think by the time 2016 plays out, we could see anywhere from 35 to 50% declines in a lot of these indices. So that is right on track. And the first phase of it, which was expected to bottom out by late September, has done just that. I thought we would see some consolidation to follow, but then another wave down begin before the fourth quarter of 2015 is complete. And there are some more specific indicators and cycles I watch that are beginning to hone that analysis and zero in on some specific time frames and signals that I'm watching. But so all of that is playing out. I think that was the first phase, as I said, especially that blow-off decline in late August, but that it is the harbinger of more to come over the next 12 to 18 months. And with respect to gold and silver, yes, I was talking about how a lot of related cycles, although independent from what I was seeing in stock indices, were showing a major bottom in mid-2015. July 2015 was the strongest convergence of all these cycles, the greatest synergy of them. And gold bottomed right at some key support that had been published throughout the year, down between 1070 and 1087. And it has been steadily developing a base since then. What I really liked is the fact that we saw gold bottom in late July, silver bottom along with it, but then silver gave a quick spike to new lows in August, even as gold held at higher lows. That was a form of divergence that I like to see around a major turning point where different markets or indices within the same arena create this divergence of some of them seeing new lows while others hold up and show a little bit more relative strength. After you saw that with gold and silver, then in September, you saw the XAU index do something similar, spiking to a new low on September 11th. I had detailed just a myriad of cycles that in that index were bottoming during that specific week, September 7th to the 11th. That spiked to a new low while gold and silver held at higher lows. So a second phase of that type of divergence. And then the final thing that I was looking for that I had talked about since late last year was I thought platinum would extend its decline the longest and that it wouldn't bottom until the fourth quarter of 2015. Lo and behold, the first couple of days of October, on the heels of the Volkswagen news and everything to do with emissions and how it impacted platinum and palladium inversely, platinum spiked to a new low in October, even as gold, silver, and the XAU held at higher lows. So it was a third sequence of these divergent lows. And I had my strongest buy signal triggered in the last couple of days of September and the first day of October, telling me to look for a surge into late October in all of the metals. That's currently unfolding, and I think that there's more upside to go. And if gold can trigger a specific signal, what I call a foreshadow signal, if it can trigger that in this time frame, that will have a very strong impact on what I expect going forward and what I expect in 2016, which for the last couple of years I've termed the golden year, that I thought 2016 would be the year that the gold bugs come back to life, that investors begin to see that, yes, gold is seeing a sizable advance and that even fundamentals would start to kick in then that validate what the technicals and the cycles are already saying. So that too is playing out. Even as we're talking here, gold is getting very close to some confirmation signals on the upside. And so that whole scenario is right on track. Same with the dollar. And the dollar could actually see another wave up into 2016. And that's the thing that probably confounds most investors. How could I be looking for gold to be heading up and the dollar to be heading up? Well, I think they'll do it in alternating stages. And we've seen that multiple times before. So there's plenty of precedent for expecting that. So I do think that the dollar could see one more wave up before things really start to come to light that hurt the dollar from 2016 on.
Now, we recently spoke with Michael Lewitt, the credit strategist, and he has a fairly bearish view on the stock market. I think along with you, he agrees that we're in the beginning stages of a bear market, but he cited the dollar as being a major factor in his outlook because, of course, if the dollar were to continue appreciating, that's going to be bad for commodities. We're going to see a lot of the emerging market dollar-denominated debt, which numbers in the trillions. That's going to be harder to pay back as the dollar appreciates. It's also going to be bad for corporate earnings, of course, for U.S. corporate earnings, since so much of their revenues are generated overseas when we're talking about some of the large cap companies. If you too are looking at the dollar to appreciate, is that kind of what you think would be the catalyst for a next wave down in the overall stock market? Do you have an idea of how those different markets relate to one another?
Yes, I definitely agree with most of what you were saying there. And I definitely think that they will be moving in tandem, that being the dollar heading back up and stock indices turning back down. Whether one will be the catalyst for the other or not, I'm not certain. And that's the thing about a lot of the work I do. I will certainly consider a lot of the possible scenarios that could be unfolding, that could be coinciding. But I think that a lot of traders and investors get burned when they're looking for too strong and too precise of a correlation. You know, for instance, if someone were under that mindset and saying, okay, I'm going to wait till the dollar breaks out to new highs, and that's when I think the stock market's really going to capitulate, the market may have already given several signals by then, and there may be something else triggering that move in both of those markets, so them both being an effect as opposed to either one being the cause. So I do think that dollar appreciating will be a major factor, and that even goes with the whole idea of 2014 being the culmination of inflationary moves in the stock market. When I was discussing that back in 2013, 2014, I was pointing out that, you know, everything dollar denominated, and that includes equities, has benefited from a declining dollar. It's never good when it's declining too fast or too hard, but when it's been a steady decline, that has helped everything from commodities to equities and everything in between. So with the dollar starting to show more signs of strength, it certainly follows suit that the inflationary moves in the stock market would start to give up some of that premium and then get to the point where it hits, again, that tipping point where the whole thing crosses the Rubicon, so to speak. It's interesting to me because, and I've laid out this scenario for the last year and a half, and I relate it back to 2006, 2007, when I thought that the dollar, basically what I described then was when the dollar broke to new 40-year lows, which I was expecting in late 2007, I thought that that would be a trigger for stock indices to kind of panic. Even though the dollar had declined steadily and very significantly from 2001 into 2007, early 2007, no one was really paying it much attention. But when you pass those very significant points of support or when you have an accelerated move, that's when all of a sudden the focus of traders, the attention of investors, all of a sudden just on a dime, it shifts and you have those massive sell-offs. And sure enough, the very end of September 2007, the dollar finally broke below and closed below its 40-year lows. And 2 weeks later, the stock market topped and ended up becoming a 50% decline. Now, coming into this period of time, I've used that same scenario except replacing the dollar with the euro and replacing dollar weakness with dollar strength, that the dollar bottomed in 2008. And it has been steadily bottoming since then. In 2011, I started talking about a 3-year cycle that was going between its lows and would support it from 2011 on. And then when we came into 2014, I did several reports talking about how the euro should peak in May of 2014 and the dollar should bottom in 2014 and then enter more significant moves. And then when you finally start to cross those key points, which the euro did in early 2015, it broke to new multi-year lows, got below 110 that I saw as a key both support and confirmation point. All of a sudden, the stock market started to give way. You had all your focus on the Greek crisis, and, you know, where the euro would be as a result of that. And it's a similar scenario. And I think when the dollar rallies back up to new highs, when the euro drops back down to new lows, which I am expecting, you're going to see another phase of kind of capitulation where then all of a sudden the stock market becomes very concerned with the whole scenario and the drop in equities could be fast and furious. And we could see a multi-year low in the stock market in 2016, even though it would be significantly lower than where it is now. And you could see a multi-year top in the dollar take hold, but that wouldn't necessarily mean that a new bull market in stocks would unfold from there. What I would expect more is at least a couple years of very volatile consolidation from that point forward. But trying to explain why I think those correlations are very important, but you also need to kind of keep them in context and realize how they often unfold in real time.
Right. And I think if you look at a long-term chart of, say, two assets that are strongly correlated, a lot of times you will see that there's either a lagging or a leading relationship. Sometimes there's more of a leading from one asset to the other. But even though there can be a tight correlation between two things over decades or more, it's not necessarily that one is going to be moving the other. A lot of times the roles can be reversed from leading to lagging relationships. So it's important to point out, and I agree with you there. I want to ask you about your crash cycles, because that was one thing that you had said when we spoke with you last October. You had said that you were seeing some crash cycles take place in 2015. Obviously, we did see the recent panic in the market in August, which aligned with your view. And then you were saying that we might see something along the lines of a drop around 35 to 50% in the stock market. We've already seen a 10% correction from the highs. So are you now looking for, I don't know, another 25 to 40% drop, or what's your outlook currently for where we are today?
Well, I should really point out the distinction there, because it's kind of an important one. And when I talk about convergence of all these different cycles, one of the ones that I had talked about was linked to a 7 and 14 and 28 year cycle, as well as this 40-year cycle of stockflation. And that led me to the conclusion that 2015 and 2016 would be the overall crash cycle, and that we would see a 35 to 50% drop during that two-year period. Within that, I thought the first phase, which was linked to a very unique 17-year cycle, you look back in the middle half from May to September of 1981, you see a approximately 20% drop in indices in that late second quarter and through most of the third quarter of the year. And that was also tied to a related 7-year cycle. When you look at the middle part of 2001, middle part of 2008, you see similar sell-offs. So the first part of that 2-year expectation was for the indices to drop about 20% in second quarter and third quarter of 2015. There are a couple indices that have not made it to that 20% threshold, and there are about two dozen, both domestic and global, that have either hit it or exceeded it. So I'd have to say that that phase is pretty well confirmed, and that's strengthening my conviction that we'll see the bigger overall decline throughout the rest of 2015 and through 2016.
Currently, we're talking, it's the 14th of October. Right now, I think we're kind of at the highs of the range on the S&P. Most of when I'm talking about a decline, usually I'm using the S&P as a proxy for the market, where we saw the 10% decline in August. So you're definitely looking at some of the other indices where we've seen a 20% decline. But we're at the high of the range. It looks like we're pulling back from that. Is your expectation then that we are going to see just a further decline from current levels? I mean, there's a lot of strategists that are saying, hey, we're going to see a year-end rally. We saw a year-end rally in 2008. We saw one in 2011, even after a decline like we saw in August. So do you think that chances are for a year-end rally are pretty small at this point, and that the further decline is going to take place from here?
I've been expecting a lot of volatility in the fourth quarter. And with those initial bearish cycles bottoming towards the end of the third quarter, and with some other indicators and cycles that I watch, I thought that you would see a lot of two-sided action in this fourth quarter. So the chances of a sustained steady rally, I would see as not real strong. But whether an all-out new decline takes hold, I'm not real strongly convicted on that either. I think it could be the early stages of it. Maybe you see a sell-off down half or two-thirds of what we've rebounded since late August, and then the market kind of heads back up towards the highs but doesn't quite make them. And then by the time first quarter of next year rolls around, then we're starting to head into more the accelerated phase of the overall decline. So those bigger cycles that I'm talking about are still playing out, and you're kind of in an in-between period within them. In fact, one of the things that I have repeatedly stated, and this was linked to some weekly cycles, it was linked to other technical indicators, was that I would expect the biggest trouble to wait until after December of this year. And that was due to, like I said, many different weekly cycles, many intra-year indicators, and a host of other tools that I use. So between now and then, again, I'm kind of back to that expectation of volatility and trading the market on a 1 to 2 week, a 2 to 4 week basis, swings in both directions that I think could provide opportunities, but a convincing trend within that October to December period, I'm not expecting that as much. I think it's going to be a lot more two-sided.
Okay, so after December is when there's a much higher probability that you think we'll see another downdraft in the market.
Yes, and that's going back to the analogy I was using of certain markets, the dollar in 2007, the euro earlier this year. Certain markets hitting breaking a key level of support or resistance, and all of a sudden other markets, in this case stock indices, suddenly getting more worried. I think that what I'm talking about here too, in December, January, actually throughout the first quarter of 2016, I think there's going to be some other markets that really hit those extreme levels that are also going to worry the market a bit, and they are things related to energy and crude oil and petrocurrencies. And I think that I have been saying since middle of 2014 that crude oil was entering a bearish cycle that should last until December 2015 or January 2016. The Canadian dollar, which really, you know, moves in lockstep with big moves in crude, had similar bearish cycles, but they extended into March or April of 2016. And I was also looking at the Russian ruble, not because I think that that's the big player in Forex, but that it's a sign and symbol of a lot of things, including some desperation on the part of Russia. That cycles in the ruble have also been telling me to look for an overall sell-off into late 2015, early 2016. So it's interesting to me that all of those should see some culmination. At the same time, I think that the market could see another wave down. And so it may be one of those things where one additional factor triggers a final exhaustive sell-off in crude and other energy markets. And that's been, you know, another factor that's been blamed for part of the market decline of this year is the sharp sell-off in crude since middle of 2014. So if that saw a capitulation sell-off, you get another similar, though perhaps magnified, capitulation sell-off in the stock market in that same time frame. And so first quarter of 2016 is really when I think that some of those things have the highest probability of unfolding.
Okay. So dollar likely to continue higher once again. crude oil, of course, going lower then in that case. And at the same time, that would be causing trouble with, as we know, emerging markets, a lot of the energy exporting areas. The Canadian dollar would be hurt by that as well. So you're kind of seeing accumulation of a lot of these different forces coming together, which would precipitate another market decline, perhaps after December, correct?
Yes. And again, if your listeners wanted to pull up a chart of the dollar back in 2001 through, say, 2008, and then look at the stock market at the same time, you kind of get an idea of a similar correlation to what I'm trying to describe, and that is that 90 or 95% of the dollar's decline happened before the stock market ever got concerned about it. And then all of a sudden, when the dollar broke that critical multi-decade support level, all of a sudden, and there were other factors too, it's not just the dollar, but all of a sudden, a 3 or 4 point move in the dollar to the downside, which in the whole scheme of things was negligible, all of a sudden, that's the straw that breaks the camel's back, so to speak. And so that's kind of similar to what I'm describing with the energy markets and the petrocurrencies, that, you know, if they see one more sell-off, and it doesn't even have to be a real significant sell-off, it just needs to be breaking to new lows, breaking key multi-year support levels, and all of a sudden drawing more of the media attention and investor focus. And you also don't know what's going to be going on geopolitically with Russia and other nations at that time, as we've already seen Russia getting a bit more assertive in just the last few weeks.
Now, tell us about the parallels that you see going on with Russia and China currently and some of the geopolitical events that we see and how that corresponds to a previous time, because I believe that there's another cycle that you are watching as well. Is that correct?
Yes, there's actually several of them, and let me focus on Russia first. Since the late 1990s, I keep kind of building on this theme that bears beget bears, and that when the antithesis of capitalism, the Russian bear, starts to flex her muscles, come out of hibernation, that every time that has happened, it has coincided with a stock market bear also coming out of hibernation and taking hold. And that I was expecting the same thing for 2014, 2015, and leading all the way through 2017. I did a detailed analysis of a very consistent 40-year cycle in Russia's history. And it was intriguing to me how much Russia and Soviet Union, just kind of treating them as one and the same, how much of that came together in 2016 and 2017. And so I do have expected Russia to start pushing her way back into the forefront of the geopolitical scene, and that worrying the stock market. And behind the scenes, this has actually been going on for several years, and I've talked about the developments with the BRIC nations, with Russia and China really spearheading the moves there, also with China and the Asian Infrastructure Bank, that there really is a concerted effort, it's been going on for several years, to slowly and steadily compete with the dollar for reserve status, for the kingpin of economic and forex type dominion throughout the globe. And so I think that 2016, 2017 is when a lot of that is going to come to a head. But it's interesting to me, too, is when you look at Russia's history and you look at some of the real watershed events and turning points within their history, it's amazing to me to see, first of all, how cyclical it has been and how precise on a 40-year cycle basis, but also intriguing to look at, you know, going all the way back to Russia's role in very tacit support of the colonists back in 1776, and their shunning of Britain and the role as they were in their golden age. They were as much an ally of the U.S. as anyone. And then you look at just key events, the end of the Napoleonic Wars in 1816 and Russia taking on a far more important role in European politics. And then 1856, 40 years later, culmination of the Crimean War, which it was very intriguing that Crimea would come back into the focus last year and usher in some of this. And then just 1896, 1936 was the constitution of the Soviet Union. And then 1977, 41 years later, a new Soviet constitution came into play. And the next phase of this 40-year cycle that has just, like I said, been so precise in marking watershed events for Russia comes into play in 2016 and 2017. But at the same time, I made reference to the 7 and 14 and 28-year cycles in the market. And to me, it's more than intriguing to see the parallels between 1973 and 2015. And you can trace, like I said, a 7-year cycle and a 14-year cycle through that whole 42-year period. And in 1973, you started out with stock markets topping. They saw a 20% drop into August, and then they rebounded into October. At the same time in October, you saw Russia, or in that case, the Soviet Union, aligning with Syria and a couple other Middle East nations in the buildup to and the aftermath of the Yom Kippur War. And so you saw Soviet military action in October of 73. And then the stock market, after rebounding from August to October 1973, saw a new sell-off into December. And then a even bigger sell-off during the ensuing year of 1974, ultimately dropping 50% between that two-year period. You roll into 2015, the markets top in the beginning of the year, just as they did in 73. Most of the indices saw a 20% decline leading into late August, just as they did in 1973. The markets rebound into October, just as they did in 1973. Lo and behold, here comes Russia taking military action in Syria in October, just as they did in 1973. And so the question is, you know, is this a parallel worth monitoring? Is there any validity to it, or is it just this giant coincidence going on? I'll certainly be watching events between now and December and see if the market looks anything like it did back in 73. And then that whole sell-off throughout 74 fits very closely with a lot of unrelated and independent cycles and indicators that were already prompting me to expect a major sell-off in 2015 and 2016. So the parallels are just uncanny, and you can even look at what gold did from that point forward. That was also when the oil weapon was first used against the West. So it's some intriguing parallels between the two time frames.
Eric, do you have any high conviction calls that you think investors should be aware of? You did say that you thought we would see a multi-year bottom in gold and silver in the middle of this year, which appears that we have seen that so far. We did put it a bottom in that July time frame. So you were accurate there. It looks like, you know, we've been rallying fairly strongly since then. So I don't know if that's a place you'd be looking at. It seems that you believe we're going to see another move down in the stock market after December, like you said, certainly into 2016. Are there any real high conviction calls that you think investors should be concerned or thinking about?
Well, really all of what I've been discussing here, I have pretty strong convictions of. Two things I would say. One is that every time I have a subscriber or a listener ask me, okay, which market do you think your work is the best in and which particular setup right now is the best? I really shy away from that type of categorization because I've seen so many times some of the best trades and best moves were very subtle signals but fortunately I adhered to them and stuck with them, even though they may not have had all of the convicting factors that I would normally look for. So distinguishing between them, I really try not to do, or not to say, well, this one's kind of higher up on the hierarchy of expectations. But the second thing I would say, too, is that timing is so critical. And like the gold and silver call that we're discussing right now, I thought that we would see our initial surge from that late July low into a late September short-term peak, and then ultimately into late October. If gold and silver see some acceleration higher in the coming weeks, which is often indicative of their moves, you know, the biggest part of the move is in the last 10% of the cycle. So, you know, maybe in the last week or two of this 3-month rebound in gold. Gold and silver, if they accelerate, if they reach some upside targets that I have, they may go into a 2 or 3 month period of consolidation, selling off, bouncing back and forth. Whereas if I'm talking about a high conviction that gold and silver are going higher, and someone waits till they see this accelerated move higher in the next week or so, all of a sudden jumps on, and then gold and silver just stagnate or sell off for 2 or 3 months, then I get the, well, you said you were really convicted about this. Well, I am, in the right context and with all of the specifications I'm giving taken into play there. You know, my buy signals were generated in late July, early August, and then the very end of September, first day of October. And so those buy signals are intact, and I'm waiting to see, recommending trailing stops and following this move as far as it goes. And I think that there will be another round of even better buy signals come early 2016. So while I have a strong conviction in that call, there are some very important distinctions and nuances to that that I think listeners have to be well aware of. Otherwise, like I said, you get the impulsive moves that, you know, when it's accelerating higher and people start hearing the talking heads give all these reasons why gold's going into the stratosphere, that's often when an initial move is pretty much done. And that's what sucks in a lot of the Johnny-come-latelys and those that just couldn't believe the cycles would be that accurate. And then all of a sudden, after a 2-month period of consolidation and maybe a little bit of a sharp sell-off to a higher low, they finally give up, throw in the towel. And that's just when the third wave, the one that's usually the most dynamic, the second advance is the third wave in Elliott wave. That's when that is just beginning to take hold and when those investors should really be looking at it more seriously. I do have strong conviction on the gold and silver call within those parameters, especially after seeing the stock market confirm what I was expecting in the second and third quarter of this year. That really gives strong corroboration to a lot of the other work that's anticipating another big sell-off, but timing is so key. The dollar expectations, the crude oil expectations, I have pretty strong conviction of all of them, and I think it's a single bigger scenario that's unfolding. It's going to take a lot of investors by surprise. So each one of those, with my work, they're all pretty strong convergence and synergy of the things that I look for, telling me to take notice and to prepare.
And when you say prepare, does that mean, you know, basically selling whatever positions they have, having a high cash position? What kind of things would you be thinking that investors should be doing to prepare?
Well, the topic of cash position has to factor in dollar expectations and, you know, when some of that is cash, gold and silver holdings. But even with that, I think that these next few years, investors are going to have to be more nimble because I think you're going to have big moves up and then the time to take some money off the table and sit back and wait for a reactive move. I think you're going to see a lot more of that in the coming years. But as far as preparing, I do think it's shifting the whole investment portfolio and that should have been going on. since late 2014 and then mid-2015 with the key things that I've been looking at there. So it's just a continuation of that process. And so I do think there will be a time where metals are also a strong consideration. But even within that context, there's a lot of competing analysis between, say, the physical metals and gold stocks. I think that the problems I still expect for the overall stock market are going to be a negative for the stock part of gold stocks, even as my positive outlook for gold will be a positive for the gold part of gold stocks.
So probably want to stay away from gold miners, GDX, GDXJ.
That I think you'd need to be even more nimble with, that there are some times when I think the XAU and other, like you said, GDX, GDXJ will have some definite upside potential. And then I think there's times when you'll see, you know, after a nice rally, gold and silver might just kind of trade sideways, and yet the gold stocks have a sharp sell-off because the market's going down. And people that are trying to play my analysis in gold and silver with gold stocks may not be thrilled with the outcome. There's even longer term cycles in the gold stocks and gold stock indices that don't come into play until late 2016, when another very important bottom could take hold. And I need to see the action in the next few months to kind of give me an indication whether I think that could be back down to the lows that are forming now, or to lower lows, or to higher lows. Cycles give me one particular variable, but then there's a lot of others that I need to factor into my overall analysis and expectations.
Sure. So, yeah, given your overall outlook for the stock market and that we're likely in the beginning stages of a bear market, crash cycles taking place this year and into next, that would be putting pressure on the gold mining indices, any stock-related play on gold. So if your outlook is correct, then in that case, you would probably want to be sticking more towards GLD or SLV or physical in specific, right?
Right, right. Yeah, those ETFs are really good vehicles to mirror what's expected in the actual metals.
Well, Eric, thank you for coming on to FS Insider and explaining your outlook once again. I do want to encourage our listeners to go back and listen to the last interview we did in October of 2014, so just a year ago. Like I said in the beginning, you made a number of prescient comments. I'm just going to list them again. You said that you expected a strong dollar rally into 2015, and we certainly saw that after your interview. If I'm looking at the trade-weighted U.S. dollar index, the U.S. dollar just shot straight higher from there, and that's when really everyone started now talking about a bull market in the dollar. So your comments were very prescient there on the dollar. You also said that you expected a multi-year bottom in gold and silver around mid-2015. In July, we saw a major bottom in both of those, and they have rallied since then. So question is whether or not that is going to be sustained. Still looking, you know, at some of the technical work to see how much further we're going to go. And that you also expected to see a strong top or peak in the stock market in late 2014, a major peak to be followed perhaps in some of the other major indices within a 3 to 6 month time frame. And we did see that. And you're looking to see some of the other crash cycles take place this year and into next. Is that pretty much a good overview of where things stand?
Yeah, that really wraps it up very succinctly.
Well, Eric, if you wouldn't mind, tell our listeners where they can find more about your work and read some of the publications that you produce.
Okay, and again, thank you for having me on, Chris. I really appreciate it. I've had some feedback from some of your listeners and really enjoyed it. The website, because of all of the work and analysis, we have developed three websites over the last several years. The primary website is insidetrack.com, spelled with the extra I in the middle, so it's insidetrack.com. It describes all our services, has subscription specifics and technical indicators we use, that sort of stuff. And then more specifically, there's 40yearcycle.com and 17yearcycle.com, both using the actual numerals, 40yearcycle and 17yearcycle.com, that have compiled a lot of the research and work and articles I've written on those two topics really over the last 15 years or more. And each of those have links to the other. So depending on the specific interest of a listener, there's those three options. I would also say that this whole topic of stockflation, there have been multiple reports that I did starting in October of 2014 and then again in May of 2015. And I would be happy to send out free copies of that to any of your listeners who email us and mention FSO.
All right, Eric. Well, thank you once again for coming on to FS Insider and speaking with us. And I think what we'll have to do is definitely get an update perhaps following next year to see how things transpired, to see if your outlook once again materialized, as it definitely did from our last interview.
Thanks. I look forward to coming back.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSN. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense NewsHour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the NewsHour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.